All right, you live your life in a totally normal, full-on reality check kind of way. That's good and cool. Things don't get messed up. People you love hang around until you can't stand them anymore. Things never change. But shit like that doesn't happen in real life. Real life? It's just a movie with someone's finger jammed on fast forward. The numbers change faster than you can count. When you're a little kid, you never think that you'll die. I mean, death is just some obscure esoteric thing that you see on TV or read about in a book. Then one day you realize what it really is. And nothing is ever the same again. From that day on, you're...
Welcome to Continuous Plays, The Art of Slaying, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer retrospective featuring Brian Thomas and Jay Newcastle.
Welcome to a special edition of The Art of Slaying and Film Strip. I'm Jay.
And I'm Brian.
And this is our Season 6 extra review of Chance, starring Amber Benson and James Marsters, written and directed by Amber Benson, released in 2002 on a budget of roughly $75,000, made the film festival rounds, and is pretty much put out now by Amber Benson's production company. So, you know, Brian, we talked a little bit at the Season 6 wrap-up of how we came up with this one, a little bit of a different kind of film. We, you know, definitely not something mainstream this time around.
Yeah, no, we wanted to do something with Amber Benson since she was killed off in this season 6 of Buffy, and you know, she's always been one of yours and my favorite characters, let's be honest. We really like the character of Tara, and we really like the actress of Amber Benson, and she's been in, let's just say, some pretty raunchy movies, and so we didn't want to go too far down, so we found this by chance and looked it up, and since she wrote it, directed, started it, and it includes James Marsters, and one of the Buffy writers, David Fury, is also cast in this briefly, we figured, what the heck, why not do this one? And so that's where we really came up with it. And well, I guess, you know, the raunchy thing's still there, but it was something to try.
And indeed, I don't think we avoided that. So, but we'll get into that. Definitely something different. You know, and we got to say, like, if you go try to find this, folks, you can find it on Amazon Instant. It's on YouTube if you want to try to watch it and stuff. You have to approach a film like this knowing that it is not a studio film. It's very, I hate to use the word amateur because Amber Benson's a professional performer. She knows what she's doing, but it's not a big budget production, yeah. You know, at all. It's not even TV production. It is definitely an independent film, has a different look to it. And, you know, you and I are not opposed to that kind of stuff, though. I mean, we did that documentary called Candyman about the guy that invented the Jelly Belly that one time with Anna. And, you know, you and I both have
seen some different independent films.
Donkey Punch, yeah, which is a different kind of film, but definitely an independent film, very different. For that matter, Nick and I reviewed The Blair Witch Project, which was, you know, at the time was one of the cheapest films to ever make that kind of money. And, you know, you and I are also, and we've mentioned it in passing in different places, we both at different times have liked Kevin Smith and Clerks as one of those, you know, famous independent stories. So, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of film we're dealing with here. And I'll go ahead and tell it now. One of the things I really got a vibe for watching this was I felt very much like I was watching Clerks shot by a girl. Like, it has some of that same feel to it.
Yeah, I think that's a good call out. I didn't think of that at the time, but it's definitely you definitely get the independent film with going for kind of the raunchy sexual humor in this film too, and you know, drugs and everything else. So it makes sense. I think, you know, now that I think about it in retrospect, some of the scenes make a lot of Clerks sense.
in the same type of vein.
So yeah, and this was 2002. I believe Clerks was 96, 5,
yeah, right
something
along in
there.
So yeah, so it's in the same basic time frame of some of that, at least the wave of what that film did for a lot of people. And, you know, you said the film's about sex. It is. It's really, though, like a big gender reversal film. You know, the men in this film are much more, atypical the way women react in relationships, and the women are much more like, you know, men are atypical to react in relationships. I think that's what Amber Benson was going for here, was to kind of tell a little, or to poke a little fun at that, maybe, or to make a commentary about it. We can decide whether or not she did, but in a way that it's all bounded by a lot of, you know, very raw humor and stuff.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say it's terrible either. I mean, some of it's really funny, but it's just weird seeing these two characters that we've watched on Buffy now for past couple seasons acting a totally different way. So that was kind of, and looking the same, I might add.
Yeah, that's the thing. They look, because I mean, they were shooting this during time when they weren't shooting Buffy. That's, you know, James Marchers is not bleach blonde, but he most definitely is in this because he's shooting Spike every other day, you know, and Amber Benson looks just like Tara looks, you know, and even in fact, I'll read a little piece of trivia on it that, you know, a lot of the clothing, the guy that did the costume design for this worked on Buffy. So he was pretty much just borrowing clothes out of the Buffy, you know, pile and stuff. So it definitely has it's funny to look at. Of course, it's always funny to watch James Marsters when he doesn't have that Billy Idol accent. You know,
right.
Because he's very much not that guy. And, you know, I think we talked about when he first came on the show back in season two. For years, I didn't realize he wasn't, you know, from the UK.
Right.
I didn't know. So, but it is a different kind of film. I guess we should do a plot summary if we can. And Brian, I'm going to leave that to you. Since you're really the champion of season six, I'm going to let you summarize Chance for
I appreciate that. All right, here we go. Chance is a 20-something slacker living in L.A. who relies on a trust fund for her finances. Her friend Simon, a not very successful telemarketer, sleeps on her couch. One day, Simon comes home from the grocery store to find a woman in Chance's bed who won't wake up. In flashbacks, we see how these two met, meet Chance's odd family, and some of their friends. Flash forward to where we started. Chance tries to comfort Simon, but soon she begins to freak out when she realizes there's a dead woman in her bed. Overcome with emotion, Simon kisses Chance, and they have sex with a dead woman in her bed.
Yeah.
They didn't have sex in the bed, though. That's good. Afterward, the two fight about the significance of the sex, and Simon leaves the apartment. The next morning, Chance finds Sarah alive, sitting in the kitchen at the table. Sarah tells her that she wasn't dead, just resting. She thanks Chance for a place to sleep and then leaves. Simon returns to Chance's apartment and Chance greets him with a hug. They both apologize for their actions and admit they are ready to try a relationship. That's kind of the convoluted plot summary of this film, Chance, Jay. There's a lot more to it, I guess. We have this annoying singer who breaks in the song quite often to tell kind of the story of what just happened in different words. That was interesting.
Yeah, instead of having music in the background, she has the singer-songwriter just appear on camera with his guitar to serenade, you know, the kitchen or the living room or whatever.
Right. And let's talk too about kind of how this worked as well. This is kind of, there's a show out there where the person who's the main character talks to the camera.
Breaking the Fourth Wall. Yeah.
I don't know that show, but anyway,
No, that's what that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, she basically will be in the film scene and then suddenly turn and start talking to the camera. Like you're a person she's telling a story to and moving in and out of it. But the funny part is here is that while she does this, the character she's interacting with see what she's doing and react to it. Like, why are you talking to yourself?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah, they call her out on it.
That was just so bizarre.
It is. It's like we're breaking the fourth wall inside of its own wall. It was, it's too meta for meta. You know, it's, and yeah. I think what she's doing there is, again, a satire on, you know, that type of technique in television and in film and such. And does it work? Does it not? I guess we could talk about when we give our final thoughts on it and such, but it's definitely the style of the film. And Amber is the central figure of it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's very little of it that she is not a major player in the scene or a big part of the dialogue on screen.
Yeah. And I really think that it focuses on Chance and Simon, right? And how they get to where they're at. So basically how she met him. Well, which they tell a phony story about how they met, which I think is hilarious. But they show Simon at work and what he does through a normal day and how he kind of meets his women, I guess. And then Chance and how she kind of just has sex with whoever she wants just for fun type stuff. I don't know.
Well, I think she sums up her own character best when she meets the guy Andy Hallett plays, who was, you know, an Angel alum, played Lauren on there. He's a singer named Jack. And she is having this conversation with him and she says, "I'm conscientiously objecting to life." So she pretty much is just not doing anything. She lives off the trust fund. She doesn't live extravagantly and she just kind of does whatever she wants and doesn't really care about, you know, much of anything. She doesn't have strong emotional attachments to much in the world. And I don't know, it's a different kind of character.
It is. I think it's an interesting character to delve into, but you can see where she gets her weirdness from. We get to meet her mom, Desiree, who comes over to the house, which is just a really bizarre scene, if you ask me, because they have Simon dress up like a girl, basically wearing a dress and everything, and trying to pretend he's Chance to the mom. And the mom plays along with it by saying, oh, your aura is totally different, Simon. I know it's you. And anyway, it was an interesting scene. But we find out that mom is kind of one of those holistic type people, I guess, who, you know.
Very much a yogi, you know, into yoga and the spiritual meditation, center, yep. Meditation. Yeah, all that stuff and new ageism and all this. And I mean, when she find out that she comes over to see Chance because she needs to tell Chance that her and her husband are broken up, Chance's father, and she doesn't even tell her the whole truth. We find out later that, like, you know, the father has run off with the younger girl, which is a trope, right? Like, that always happens. But when we find out later is that, no, mom brought the younger girl into a relationship with dad to try to spice things up, and as it turned out, the younger woman preferred him to her, so, you know, that's why she left. But the dad was like, no, I'd rather you come back. She's not my type.
Right.
You're my type. And it's just odd. I mean, I want to keep using that word. It is just a strange little tale. Like, I don't know. And, you know, you mentioned something there, like when Chance and Simon tell somebody how they met, they say they met at like a mental institution together, and they wound up getting room together because they thought Chance was a boy. And as it turned out, they both were, you know, equally the same or whatever. And that's not true at all. And you wonder how much of this is even remotely accurate, you know, if we're to believe that this is Chance telling a story and it's not just about her and her best guy friend finally hook up and then this is her way of dealing with it. You know, I don't know. I mean, it can be interpreted a lot of ways, I think.
Yeah, I think it can too. And yeah, I thought it was a humorous story. And I like when after they get done telling the story, they're telling it to a guy who basically had slept with Chance and thought that it meant more than it did, which will happen again in this movie. And he wanted really her to have a relationship with him. And she's just like, no, I just used you for sex. And so he breaks down crying. So they bring him back into the house. And yeah, it's rather silly. But
really strange.
They tell the story and it's okay.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we really can't walk through this one piece by piece like we normally would. So I think we just got to talk about our characters here and you know, different things they do. So let's start with Chance, with Amber Benson as it is. I mean, definitely playing a different character than Tara. Every character she plays is different. Tara is a unique character. So aside from that, what did you make of Chance?
Well, I mean, she's basically a sexually charged female who has nothing better to do with her life until she finds the one she wants than to just go around and have fun.
Right.
Right.
I took her totally as she was playing a very sexually aggressive female, but her attitudes are what we typically think of males having. You know, she is the love 'em and leave 'em kind, one night stands, whatever, don't get attached, and just kind of, she's a total slacker. I mean, she is like, you know, Dante from Clerks or Randall, maybe a little more Randall because she's a little more raw about it and stuff, but she, you know, she's just sort of a do whatever, you know, and not in a hurry to really get on with anything, you know, just taking it as it comes. And I think it was a different way of playing that, you know, especially when you compare her to Simon, and we'll talk about in a minute, and the way he's portrayed. But I don't know, did you get that off of her, that she was this, you know, female character that was acting with a lot of, you know, typical male tropes?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, she was definitely that way, and you know, not ashamed of it too. And I think you called it out when we talked about this earlier. This is a role reversal type thing here, you know. The female has the chauvinistic attitude and the male has the typical I want love, not sex attitude, right?
Right. Yeah. He even says it, you know, she calls it, you know, effing or whatever. And he, or she calls it, you know, very raw, you know, sex. And he's just like, he was making love. And she was just starts laughing at him.
Right. Right.
You know? And that's not who she is.
Yeah. No, it isn't. And yeah, that's exactly what I would take off it too. And if you want to do the Clerks comparison, I would say Amber Benson is definitely Randall and James Marsters is more like Dante.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, then which one is the girlfriend that sucked 37 dicks?
Well, that would be Sarah.
Yes, you would. The mysterious girl in the bed, which, by the way, played by the woman who was married to Nicholas Brendon for a number of years. That was his wife. So the Buffy things continue on this, but.
There you go. That's actually pretty interesting. I didn't know that fact, so that's kind of neat.
Tressa DeFila, I think is how you say her name, was married to Nick Brendon. I think they weren't married at the time this was done. They were married, you know, afterward or whatever. But anyway, yeah, that's his wife. So, or was his wife, I should say. So, yeah, definitely calling it. This is, you know, the typical call in the favors kind of film, you know, and that, I mean, in every way. So, you know, that's just a little bit of trivia to throw in there, but I guess she would be that girl. But well, let's talk about Simon then. You know, the role reversed male, the loser telemarketer. I mean, that's how he meets women. Is he meets strange women on while he's trying to sell them something on the phone, and that's how he gets his dates. And he's obsessed with his own body odor. I didn't get that. Like, that was all very weird.
He was, I couldn't quite figure him out. I thought maybe he was a little retarded at times or had some mental issues. And then they told the story about how they met in a mental institution. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. And then they tell you that it's fake. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. I still think it makes sense. He was odd, just a weird character to play all around. He seemed like, you know, they said in the story they made up that he was asexual. It totally seemed like he was the whole time. Like, he didn't give a crap about any of that stuff. He wasn't looking for a relationship or anything. You couldn't tell if he was straight or gay the whole time. It was just kind of like, who is this guy?
Yeah. He just seemed to need, like, companionship. I mean, he lives on her couch, basically, because, of course, he's not a good telemarketer. And he, like, you know, goes through this whole bit of trying to borrow money from her. And that's how she talks him into, you dress up like me for the weekend, and I'll be you when my mom comes over and all that stuff. Which is, like, that's told as, like, an aside, you know, for, like, 15 minutes as they're having a whole other conversation. It's really strange transitions. But,
yeah.
I mean, that's how that whole thing goes down. And he's very... you know, someone in need of connection with people, but he doesn't want sex, and he doesn't really, you know, you don't really get the idea that he wants a lot of riches or fame and stuff. He's not hanging out with her for that. He wants to be connected to someone. And in a lot of ways, he is connected to her. I mean, they are the typical platonic, you know, different sex friends, right? I mean, that's the roles they're playing here.
It is. And you know, even the whole crux of him in this episode is to get money from somebody so that he can pay for parking tickets. He has this hang up about being on time for everything, and everything's by time. You know, time is so important, except for when he has to deal with real life situations, right? So it was just a bizarre character all around. And I kept trying to figure out what the heck he was. What his purpose was.
Now, have you seen James Marsters in much besides
nothing
stuff on Buffy?
I've not seen him in anything. I know he's been in a couple of big shows lately, but I haven't seen him in anything, no.
The only other stuff I've ever seen him in was when he was on Smallville, and he came in and did some of that, and besides Angel and Buffy, obviously. And I thought he was really good in that stuff. I mean, I liked him in that, but I've never seen him in, you know, any of the – well, I take that back. I've seen him in one movie he was in, but he was in it for like 2 seconds. He was in the House on Haunted Hill remake that was done. But, you know, I know he's been on Hawaii Five-O and done a lot of other stuff. I haven't seen him in years, but he's still working today. But I've only seen him in Smallville when he was in, I think, like 12, 13 episodes of that or something. But I mean, he was a different character there too. So I mean, he's a guy that can play a lot of different types. I'm just so used to seeing him as Spike, and the way Spike is, even for the long arc Spike gets on the show, this is a completely, like, it would be, well, it is like watching David Boreanaz when he's playing his romantic comedy leads, or some of the stuff he gets to do on that show Bones, if you've seen that. I mean, it's just a different kind of turn, and I don't know, I kind of liked it. I mean, he was nothing against Amber Benson and what she was doing, but I was really going with him. I kind of felt for Simon. I mean, he seemed like a decent guy, and he just couldn't get a break with this girl. And then he finally gets her to sleep with him, or he sleeps with her, and she totally blows him off like a one-night stand, and she breaks his heart.
Sure, but did you really think the whole time that he was trying to get with her? Because I didn't get that vibe at all until all of a sudden it happened.
No. I think he was just trying to connect with her on any level possible. And then when that, you know, happened, he went with it, of course, because it just was the natural evolution. He thought it was the next step to something when she was, you know, for her, it was just a distraction from the dead girl in her bed, you know,
which is,
that's a whole other weird thing going on. But I mean, that's exactly it. And again, he's playing the romantic comedy female role here, you know, that finally, you know, gets with the best friend and then it's awful, you know? And so for him, and he ends up sitting on a park bench talking to Jack, who's kind of hitting on him. And, you know, then they have this whole conversation and Jack's like, no, man, you're just easy to talk to. And it's almost like he finds his way and he realizes I need to get back there real quick before this gets any worse or whatever. And then he's able to go and they make up and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is a good time to transition into Jack because we see him a couple times in this episode. The first time is at a club, right?
Yeah, and singing at the open mic night, which
Amber really takes it.
Yeah, forgive me, Brian. I know you do a lot of open mic nights and play a lot and stuff. I couldn't help but go, like, I wonder if that's what it looks like when Brian's up there jamming out with Dirtball Deluxe or whatever. But I hope it's not.
It wouldn't look like Dirtball Deluxe, no. But maybe when I'm up there on my own. Anyway, you know, he comes down and she strikes up a conversation with him. And I love it. She goes, oh, here's my number. And he basically says, I'd give you mine, but I don't have a phone. So what good is that number? I just thought that was funny.
What's he going to do? Go to a payphone or go to a friend's phone and call you?
Yeah.
He does that line to everybody. Like, can I have your phone number? I'd give you mine, but I don't have a phone. That was weird. But.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we see him later on with Simon, and Simon's basically run away and he's sleeping on a park bench, and here comes Jack and he notices who he is. Hey, I saw you at the club the other day. And mind if I sit down? And they start talking, and you know, it comes up in conversation that Jack is gay and he kind of has a liking for Simon. And of course, at the end of that conversation with Simon, basically says, no, I'm not gay at all, blah, blah, blah. Jack says, well, I'd give you my phone number, but I don't have a phone. And Simon's like, no, it's okay. It's all right. And walks off.
Yeah.
He's a funny character, though.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit part again, but it is kind of neat. And you can see, particularly you and I are both fans of the Angel show. Lauren is one of those, you know, one of the side characters that I really grew to like on that show. And, you know, sadly, Andy Hallett's no longer with us on this earth. He died a few years ago. And he is such a talented guy, though. I mean, he could sing, and that was what he was always doing on the show, was singing or doing something like that. And here he has, it's that same voice. Like when he started singing, I was like, wow, it's the same voice. It was so different to hear, you know, because I haven't seen him in anything else except what he did on Angel. And I know he did other work, but I just never saw any of it. And I thought, wow, this is kind of a blast from the past to see him doing that. But, I think he's there. I don't know what he's supposed to be. You know, I don't know if he has a Clerks analog or not, you know, but he's just this guy that he kind of gets Simon to he's a good sounding board for Simon there at the end to be able to, you know, throw out, you know, own up to his feelings, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And then that's how he makes his way back to Chance's apartment.
Right. Yep. I agree. Like I said, a fun little side character that's about all he is, but it was cool to see him in something other than a green face, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other thing is, you know, you don't recognize him. You know him by his voice and what he sings and talks like, but he's usually behind so much of that makeup and in the Lorne makeup that he looks very different outside of that, as you would think he would.
Yeah.
And have horns on his head and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's a different look. So it was kind of neat to see. Hey, what did you make of her wacko family? Her mom, dad, Heidi, you know, all that business.
It was very hippie.
It is so hippie, but like I was like, do those people still exist? Would they have had a kid her age in the 2000s? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely they do. It was an interesting character set. I like that she came over and decided to move in with her daughter to hide from father. And then she gets all hyperventilative when Chance basically brings her out on a date with her father. And we forget to mention Rory here, who is brought in to basically try and seduce the 18-year-old that the father has been seeing so that the mom and the dad can get back together. That's Amber's plan, or Chance's big plan.
Seems to work because apparently he's like some soap opera character. And I can't help but think this is Amber kind of poking at the super serious fans that just go overboard about stuff. Because when Heidi meets him, she's like, oh, they won't tell you, but your wife is cheating on you with so-and-so, and she's going to try to kill you, you know, and it's so hilarious.
Right.
And of course, he just plays it like, oh, okay. But he's also like, this is going to be an easy score.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I kind of wonder, I'm like, I wonder if she's making some fun at some of her co-stars. Yeah. Well, that world.
What's your take on the dad, Malcolm? Because he seems just like this completely laid back, like nothing matters type guy, and whatever happens, happens. Is that how you took him too?
Well, he's very like matter of fact, but he seems to be very calm and easygoing too. I mean, he's much like the way Chance is, because like Heidi gets stuff wrong all the time and he corrects her, but he doesn't do it in like a bad way. It's like, no, dear, you mean this word. And, you know, oh, okay. And then he's just real kind of unassuming and calm. And then even when the wife, you know, confronts him about, you know, oh, you left me for the sugar woman. He's like, no, dear, that wasn't what I did at all. You know, you brought her in. She preferred me to you, but you're my type. And I mean, he's just real earnest.
Right.
But he's also, like Chance, not in a real big hurry to go anywhere. I mean, he's almost like he's high, too. I mean, I definitely
got that vibe, too, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, this guy has smoked a lot of weed or something. He just comes off like he would be that kind of guy.
Yeah, let's talk about, too, the one of the lines that I thought was the best in this was when Simon and the mother are sitting at a table talking about the family, and you got the Chance is the daughter and the son's name is Zero, so that their names were Zero Chance. Hilarious. But then the mom talks about how he was conceived in Oregon, because for some reason Oregon comes up a lot in this episode, and she says he was conceived while driving down the road, and Simon's like, you had sex while driving, and that drove him crazy. And then she admits that Amber was conceived on a turnpike or something. I can't remember what it was, but she drops a line where she was conceived, and he goes, you seem to have a lot of luck conceiving in moving vehicles. It's a hilarious line. I thought that was just awesome. And it shows you that type of person. And then she says, well, she was on cop patrol while they were conceiving Zero. And she's like, you are turned around? She goes, well, yeah, I had to drive somehow. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it is weird. I mean, it's like, take the most uncomfortable conversation you can ever have your parents is when they're telling you how they made you, basically, and then just make it weirder.
Exactly.
But what the funny thing is like, everybody else is weirded out of this. Chance is just like, yeah.
I mean, she has no reaction other than to ask questions, you know, and doesn't care a bit about it.
Well, I mean, I think too, you get the idea, like, she grew up with it, so your family's never as weird to you as they are to everybody else.
right.
I mean, that's especially if you don't care what anybody thinks, and that's certainly her. So, okay, what did you make of the whole, I mean, I guess we need to talk about the central through line of the story is that Chance goes to this club, which turns out to be kind of the backstage of the Bronze, and hooks up with Sarah, and like, she has this whole, you know, monologue about how, I'm not really gay, and, you know, I wasn't even really experimenting, but hey, why not? I didn't have anything better to do.
Well, and then she had a lot of drugs, too.
Yeah, she had a lot of drugs, so they go back to the apartment, and she thought the girl was pulling out, you know, handcuffs or something kinky, and it's more drugs. And Chance was like, yeah, I don't know if that's a good idea. And as it turns out, she thinks this girl overdoses, and, you know, and that's how she winds up dead in the bed. And that's when Simon comes in and finds her.
Right.
And Chance comes back and sees him sort of in the corner, kind of rocking himself, you know, freaking out about it. What did you make of that whole thing and how they react to it? Like, there's a dead body. What are we supposed to do with the body?
I thought it was really bizarre, like, that they didn't call the cops. They just let it sit in there overnight, by the way.
Yeah.
And you would think they'd either call the cops to get her out or get rid of the body, something. But yeah, it was quite odd. And then the whole fact that somehow she's still alive and gets up and walks out is another funny thing.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. Simon's like, you're crazy. You've done something with the body. There's no way that girl was alive. And you're sort of left to wonder, is he right? Or is that just, again, just part of the story and it's just another one of the quirky things in the story or what?
Yeah, I don't know what I think that you're supposed to believe that she actually got up and walked out. Otherwise, I don't know. I don't know. It was really bizarre.
I think she was, again, just like all these other people, kind of a do-whatever type of person and just took a, you know, siesta for a while. I mean, she probably did, you know, loc out pretty hard on whatever she was taking, but she just snoozed through it and then got up and was like, okay, bye, thanks, you know, and
right.
That was it.
Right.
So
very strange.
Okay, so Simon and Chance, you know, as a stress relief, I guess, from that experience, kiss and then they have sex together.
We're led to believe they have sex together.
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty clear that they do. And because they have this whole conversation afterwards, and she's like, what's the big deal? It's just us having sex, you know? And he's like, no, it was, you know, like I've said, he was making love and all, they had this whole back and forth and they have the opposite reactions. Right. And he gets up and storms out, you know, I mean, what did you make of
sorry,
that?
Yeah. Simon, I thought you meant Sarah. Yeah. Okay. No. Yeah, I agree. It just shows the character differences, right? Like you said, we got the males playing the over emotional type and the female playing the chauvinistic type. And this is a perfect example of that happening where Simon wants to say that they made love and she's like, no, you got boinked, and it upsets him and he just walks out and leaves, and she's like, well, okay, you know, take a chill pill.
Yeah, and but then you do get the standard romantic comedy ending, and she even has some, you know, quirky line about it. They're like, wouldn't that be effing great? You know, we just wound up together. Fine, you know, and then they do. And what did you make of that? I mean, I didn't see that coming. I really thought they would just, you know, be friends and it would end. I didn't see them actually, you know, going, yeah, we can make this work or whatever.
You know, I was kind of disappointed that they went that route, actually. I was hoping it would be just like what you said. They'd come back and he would admit that it was just sex and she would be like, yeah, get over it. And that would be it. And they'd be friends again and it'd be done. Instead, they did go that route where he just comes back out of the blue. And apparently that one, you know, 12-hour period when they're not together is enough for them to fall in love with each other for good. I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, I thought that was really strange. Like, I'm with you. It would have been actually funnier if he came back and said, well, I want to pay you back your $200, but I still want to sleep on your couch. And, you know, then she was like, of course you can sleep on my couch. And they were just buddies again.
Yeah.
You know, like, I thought that's where they were going with this, but obviously that wasn't what happened.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think it would have been better off if they had not gone that route. But again, it's the end of the movie, so who knows what happened in the end, but whatever. Let's talk about one last character, and that is Milton.
Oh, the weird guy in the hall.
The weird guy across the hall, yep, in the other apartment, who keeps taking pictures of Chance and showing up at creepy times in Chance. I thought he was bizarre. I love that he has the name Milton, by the way. Office Space fans will like that. he came off as really bizarre. And then at the very end, when Simon's missing, he knocks on the door and talks about these dead bugs that he was before looking at on her windowsill and how they scare him the most of everything is these dead bugs, because they don't just die without a reason. So I thought that was a really bizarre thing. And then he gives her a sticky pad full of dead bugs. What'd you think of that?
Very strange. I mean, I thought it was thrown in to just be weird.
Yeah.
And it worked on that level, I guess. But I was like, less Milton, more. Ooh. But he's there just to show that Chance is kind of harsh to everyone around her. You know, he's really harmless.
Yeah.
But, and he's always, you know, talking to her, and he says something to her, he pays her a compliment. He's like, you know, of all, I've lived here for a long time and you're the most interesting person by far in this whole thing. And she's like, oh, wow, thanks. You know, like, she's sort of taken aback that he's not trying to hit on her and doesn't just want her, you know, for sex. He's just being nice to her. He's a weird dude, but he's just being nice to her. And I think it's supposed to show that she's starting to come around to realize that there's more to people than just, you know, kind of how she blows them off and stuff.
Well, I'll tell you what, I thought she was going to jump them, like have sex with them. for being nice to her. That's what I really thought was going to happen, that he was going to leave and then she's going to let him score with her or something. The way this movie went, that's how I thought it was going to be, but I was way wrong, thank goodness.
It definitely comes off that way. I can see how you get that. So. Well, Brian, I think we're at the point of this podcast where it's time to give final thoughts, recommendations, and popcorn ratings. So what are yours for Chance?
It was bizarre, right? But a lot of independent movies are. I'm not going to lie. A lot of them are concepts that people come up with, have no money to put it really in production with, and have no real writing team to do anything. Not to say Amber Benson's a bad writer, because she writes books now and everything else. But you could tell this was just something that came out of her brain, and she thought it was a good idea and went with it. And, you know, more power to her. But it wasn't horrible. I didn't want to turn it off. And that's always a good thing. And I didn't mind watching it. And I actually got involved with some of the characters, Simon's character. I tried to figure out what his deal was. It was interesting to me to try to figure that out. I always enjoy watching Amber Benson, no matter what she's doing. So I didn't mind listening to her character. I thought the family was intriguing enough to pay attention to. So overall, this isn't a horrible movie. For an independent film, it's actually not bad at all. I'm going to give it a medium popcorn.
You know what? I'm with you. At no time, as quirky and strange as this is, did I want to turn this off. I was intrigued by this thing completely. And I think I said at the outset, this feels like the female Clerks or whatever. And I think Amber Benson has a real wicked sense of humor. And I'm not going to be surprised if at some point she winds up, you know, doing a lot of work in a comedy series again, or, you know, having a film like this or something like that. I mean, I think, you know, she's definitely got a funny, wicked sense of humor. And this one's very much dated by its time, but it's not awful. And if you're into independent films and you want to see characters and actors that play characters you really like do something really different, you do a lot worse than this. So I'm with you. I think this is medium popcorn, and certainly was something worth doing for our season 6 extra, which, you know, like it or not, is definitely a different season for the Buffy show. And yeah, So it's good that we've picked up very different season extra. So, well, Brian, that puts an end to season 6, as it were. We closed the book on that, and it's time to start season 7 of our Buffy the Vampire Slayer reviews. Can you believe it?
No, it's pretty exciting, actually. I'm looking forward to this season and seeing how I react to it the second time around, as this will be my second time seeing any of these episodes go through. So I'm excited about it. I can't believe we've made it through 6 whole seasons, and we're on to the final season, and who knows what happens after we're done with this, but it's been one hell of a ride, and I'm looking forward to the final chapter here.
Absolutely. Me too. Looking forward to doing this. And folks, we are glad you're along for the ride with us as well. When Brian and I started this thing, we never would have thought we'd had as many of you follow the show as do and interact with us. And we just enjoy the heck out of that. Whether you agree with us or not, we really appreciate your support. And you can always find ways to hook up with us again. You know, we're still here and got a lot more to go. Go to our website, theartofslaying.com. You can find links to our Facebook and Twitter pages. You can search through the archives. They're organized by characters, by seasons, all kinds of ways you can find your way through our episodes. And let us know what you think. Drop us a comment. Leave us a review on iTunes. Those really help get the podcast out. We do appreciate your support. So until we're back for season 7, for Brian, I'm Jay. Thanks for listening to The Art of Slaying.
What are you doing?
I was trying to comfort you.
Comfort my ass. You were trying to come on to me while I was in the middle of being emotionally scarred. How low can you go?
But I need that $200, Chance, please.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer is the copyright of Fox Television Studios, and any discussion of the characters, episodes, or music is strictly for entertainment purposes only.